This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Welcome back to the Oddballsy Podcast. I'm your host, Oz Oddball. Thank you for joining me on tonight's show. We're going to have a bit of a chat about Sasquatch, about Bigfoot. So strap in and see how we go with this because, it's just going to be a pretty casual show tonight. Just talking about all things Bigfoot and Sasquatch. I haven't done a chat episode for a while where we just talk about everything about one topic. So thought we'll have a crack at it. So before we begin, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Aussie Oddball. Also on the Instagram and the Facebook page is The Oddball Aussie Podcast. If you want to support the show by buying any merch, that's The Oddball Aussie Podcast on TeePublic. And also check out the network Straight Up Strange Productions. That's who I'm a part of. You can go to straightupstrange.com and check out all the really good shows over there. Alrighty. So how's everyone been doing? I hope you've all been doing very, very well. I hope you enjoyed the news to start your week off. This week's been pretty flat out for me. So the chance to do a couple of the episodes that I want to do sort of dried up a little bit. We didn't have enough time to do all the research. And I'd prefer to provide you a show that I've done proper research for instead of just winging it like we will be tonight. But we won't be winging it so much because I know this topic fairly well. This is one close to my heart, Sasquatch. And many of you know, many people who listened to the show before will know that one of my very first side hustles out of high school was helping a Yowie research team, which if you don't know, Yowie is the name that we give the Australian version of Bigfoot. So, one of my first jobs was helping a Yowie research team in the Blue Mountains and out northwest. And it was interesting. I never really saw anything. Saw some interesting stuff that I guess I would say I could have written it off as a lot of other things. But they seem pretty adamant that they had found something. But nothing conclusive, nothing I could definitely say 100% that was Sasquatch. We had a really interesting recording session one night where we got some recordings that would sound like an ape in the valley, and I've been trying to get a hold of those, but haven't been able to. And yeah, there's been not much else that we saw. So to me, it's still something I'm searching for. I'm still searching for answers. I still want to know what's out there. I don't necessarily know if we have Yowies in Australia. It's a very interesting topic. I'm open to the idea that they could be there, but the evidence doesn't exactly rack up. And in America, I'm probably more likely to believe if there is something, it'd be somewhere in America or Eastern Europe, just because of things like the amount of food to eat there and stuff like that. There is quite a bit of stuff out there in the Australian bush that things could live on, but the issue is that we're talking about a potential predator that would have to have some fairly smarter than your average bear type hunting skills. And the thing with Australia is there isn't a great deal of stuff out. I mean, yes, you've got kangaroo and you've got things like that, but there isn't really, like you have in America, some of the areas there. Go up near Alaska and up near Canada and stuff like that, especially Canada. You've got rivers up there where salmon just you could just walk into the river and just pick up 10, 20 salmon. They're just making their way downstream. And this attracts a lot of animals. And one of the big ones is, if a bear can survive out there, why can't something else of a larger predatory nature? So it's a very interesting subject, in my opinion, because there is so many stories out there, so many claims, and these claims go all the way back to ancient days. I mean, the Yowie story has been around as long as the the Yowie Bigfoot story, Sasquatch story, it's been around as long as, say, UFOs and ghosts have been. I mean, ghosts and UFOs have appeared in carvings and have appeared in stories and things like that from ancient times. And so do large, hairy hominids. And this is, I think, the most striking thing. And it's Bigfoot, Sasquatch has definitely become a brand almost. It's definitely become the main logo, if you will, for cryptozoology. And I think there's another interesting thing about Sasquatch, Yowie, Yeti, wherever you are in the world, is that we tend to have this thought that we'd have to find some sort of remains. And I agree with that. I get that. But I've been talking to a lot of people who are outdoorsmen in America, and they say it's very hard and very rare to find the remains of a bear. And bear don't exactly bury their own or anything like that. So if a population of Sasquatch were to survive like a population of bear do, we know that bear survive. We know there's plenty of bear in America and in North America especially. And for that to occur, we got to think that there has to be remains found somewhere, but a lot of people say they don't find remains. Then I've heard other sides of the story, people say we find bear remains all the time. I can't say any of these documentaries or even nature documentaries that I've seen that do you see anyone talking about finding bear remains? And it's, you always hear about people, especially here in Australia, we always find roos and dead cattle, stuff like that, like cattle that have broken away from the pack, from the herd rather. And you'll find remains like that, goats, sheep, things like that. A lot of herbivore animals. Now, in Australia, we don't really have many. People are going to go, but what about the... We don't really have any predator animals in Australia. And when I say it, we don't have any carnivorous animals apart from, you know, your crocs and your dingoes and sharks. You know, and these aren't things that you generally find in lush forests. Like, dingoes are very much a western... very bushland, desert type animals. They are found on the coast. You can find them in areas where it is quite lush, but they don't tend to live in the jungles so much. And then as far as other predators go, or carnivores rather, really the next carnivore that's landbound, or it's not really even landbound, would be birds. We've got quite a few birds that are carnivorous over here, but even then, most of them are scavengers as well. And the dingoes, a lot of them are scavengers. I mean, they will hunt, but they'll also scavenge quite a bit. So it leaves me wondering whether the Yowie could even be a possibility, only because, you know, there isn't really as much proof out there for Yowie as there is for Sasquatch. Though in saying that, I've been watching a lot of interesting groups, listening to a lot of interesting Aussie Yowie groups. And one of the really good ones is the Yowie Hunters Forum. So that's yowiehunters.net. And I had thought it had died. I actually thought this website had fallen apart, and because I remember this has been around for years and years and years. I think it was around even probably over 97. So 97, this was made. So probably the longest standing research forum on Bigfoot, at least on Yowies. And, it's a great place for people to leave their stories. And we'll go through a few of those after. But We've also got a map of where a lot of people have put claims in. There's, if you go to Google Maps, there's actually an AKA Bigfoot World map you can find. And this is where people have pinpointed stories of where these Bigfoot come from. So they go by a lot of different names. I mean, obviously, Yowie in Australia, Sasquatch in America. You've got the Wood Booger in Florida. They call them skunk apes. Interesting fact about that is that for those new to this sort of world, they call it a skunk ape. Not, they do smell apparently, but they call it a skunk ape because of a white streak going down down the spine and over the head of these particular Sasquatch. And that's interesting because it sort of, if that turns out to be true, then it indicates different species of the same animal. You've got the Mogollon monster in Arizona. What else we got? We've got the the Mono Grande in Guyana. In South Africa, you got the water Bobbejaan, and in East Africa, you got the Ogogwe. In England, you got the big grey man. Yeah, they're all over the place. They all have different names. It's quite interesting. In Asia, we have quite a few as well. Actually, there's a lot in Asia, a lot of sightings in Asia. The Yeren is one name they call it over there. Jinsung in central China. In Hubei, China, they call it the Chinese Yeti. Even going out to Japan, you've got the Hibigon. And these appear in a lot of these stories. Russia calls it the Yeti, and so does a lot of that area. A lot of Eastern Europe just calls it the Yeti. Some of them all have. You've got to think that, like America, you've got in America, they might call them all Sasquatch, but they'll give them sort of little individual names for the areas. Like we said, Wood Booger, then you've got Skunk Ape, things like that. So there's so many different names for these things. And it's crazy because for something that many say does not exist, it has a lot of information on these things. And there's so many different variations, and but we just haven't been able to prove it. You know, we just can't prove it. I mean, and people have been caught perpetrating hoaxes. I mean, in 2012, in Montana, a man was killed by a car while he was trying to do a Bigfoot hoax using a ghillie suit. Now, for those of you that don't know, a ghillie suit is what people use when they're hunting, or military might use them if they're a sniper. And it's a suit that it's covered in what looks like leaves and branches and things like that. And it's designed to make you blend in with the ground. And yeah, this guy was just waiting outside. He was trying to make out he was a Bigfoot, and got hit by a car, sadly, and was killed. But the problem is that we have so many of these people who come out and admit to faking things that, once again, like the UFO community, like the ghost community, it really puts a stain on everything, because instead of having good faith and going that people are actually trying to figure things out, a lot of the skeptics will go, well, what about this? You know, what about this man in Montana? You know, you've got someone like Rick Dyer who, look, Rick Dyer was someone who I really followed. I really thought Rick Dyer had a lot of stuff going for him. I thought, and a lot of people still do. A lot of people still do think he's got a lot of truth behind what he said. But 2014, he perpetrated a Bigfoot hoax, said that he killed a Bigfoot in September 2012 outside of San Antonio. He claimed to have had scientific tests conducted on the body, from DNA tests, 3D optical scans, to body scans. It is a real deal. It's Bigfoot, and Bigfoot's here. And I shot it, and now I'm proving it to the world. This is according to Rick Dyer. He said that he kept the body in a hidden location, and he intended to take it on tour across North America in 2014. So many of you would have seen this, the photos of this dead body. really, I mean, it looks legit. And videos showing this dead body of a Sasquatch. He never released the tests or the scans. He refused to disclose the test results or to provide biological samples. He said the DNA results were done by an undisclosed lab and he could not be matched to identify any known animal. Dyer said that he would reveal the body and tests on February 9, 2014 at a news conference at Washington University, but he never made the test results available. After the Phoenix tour, the Bigfoot body was taken to Houston on March 28, 2014. Dyer admitted on his Facebook page that his Bigfoot corpse was another hoax. He had paid Chris Russell a Twisted Toy Box to manufacture the prop from latex. So Twisted Toy Box, great stuff. They do some amazing stuff. They're, special effects, essentially, and makeup. So he made the prop from latex, foam, and camel hair. He nicknamed it Hank. Dyer earned approximately $60,000 from his tour, from the tour of this second Bigfoot corpse. He said that he did kill a Bigfoot, but did not take the real body on tour for fear that it would be stolen. So after coming out and saying that he had faked it, he said, "I had faked it in the sense that I'd taken a fake one on tour, but I do have the real one tucked away." Now, the problem with that is part of me wants to believe that that could be a legit reason. My skeptical side of my brain goes, come on, do you also have a bridge to sell me? Like, what what are we supposed to believe with that? It muddies the water and it really pisses me off. I love this stuff. I love researching this stuff, and I hate it when I find what seems to be a really interesting thread and I pull on that thread and I follow it, and you put the research in, you put the hours in to look to making contact with these people and stuff like that, only to find out that the whole time they'd been leading the whole community along. And 2014, I remember when this happened, I was still in contact with the Yowie group that I worked for back in 2008, and I contacted them and asked them if they'd heard about it, and they were so mesmerized. They honestly believed this was going to be a real thing, to a point where it actually fractured the group a bit, because a couple of people said no, they've heard of Rick Dyer, they didn't like him. So the group fractured into these two. One side that was very much all about the science, to a fault, where they wouldn't open themselves up to anything else. And then we also had another side of the group that was way too open, way too believing of everything that came up. And this really kicked them in the teeth when it was revealed that it was fake. And it exposed as well a problem within the group that already existed, because you had people in there who, once finding out that it was fake, people on the more scientific side were sitting there basically thumbing their nose at the people who broke away from the group. And so there was never going to be a chance for them to reform and get back to the group that they were in before. So that was sad. Once again, this is just going to be a very casual conversation. No, this is just me ranting and talking from the top of my head. And it was sad because you got these people who had something in common. They loved the outdoors. They loved being out there. They loved, you could take away all the tech. Honestly, you could take away all the tech. And it was more fun when I first came on board in 2008. They didn't have much tech. They didn't have anyone sponsoring them. They didn't have any money really whatsoever, apart from what they were chipping in each. And even then, because most of these guys had wives when I met them, they're only chipping in, wives and families, they're only chipping in what they could to support the cause. Like, vehicles, they bought an old, you guys would call it a pickup over in America, but an old ute. And, with a canopy on the back, and that became sort of the off-road vehicle that we're able to use. This thing was, a 1980s ute, an old Nissan Navara, and it was a brilliant ute, did the job, but no air conditioning. Well, it had air conditioning, but it didn't work. old crappy bull bar that had sort of been put together by a friend of a friend. This wasn't a great ute. Seats are torn in the back. Nothing looked great on it. And as far as tech went, we had a mate's wife's camera, which was just one of those. Remember those cameras you could get from Big W? I think you could still buy them probably. But it was just a crappy sort of about the size of an old flip phone. And they were simply just a fancy looking screen on the back, viewfinder, and a really tiny lens on them. Like, these things were pissy. Great for taking photos of you, your friends, and if you're out and about with family. But if you try to take a shot of an animal from a distance, a zoo, or if you try to take a picture of your kids on the Ferris wheel, it was never going to happen. And when you zoomed in, it wouldn't focus. One of these sort of things. And the thing was bright metal pink, like metallic pink. So that was our first camera in the group. Then as far as recording equipment, we had MP3 players, and they were our own MP3 players. I remember I had this red one about the size of a, what would you compare it to? About the size of a mouse, a computer mouse, but it was a cylinder sort of shape, and it plugged straight into your computer, and you'd obviously put your music on it. Now, this MP3 player held a massive 250 megabytes, which at the time was pretty cool. That was 2007, 2008. That was pretty cool. And it had a record function on it. And this was what I came along, this new guy that was just there to carry equipment and get paid, which, I mean, at first I got a bit suckered in and didn't ask for payment at first. And so I was there to hold equipment, record them while they did their little interviews and their reporting and stuff. Never took off. But maybe if they did it now, actually, I think it'd probably do really, really well. But because I came along with this MP3 player, they're like, oh, man, like, come on, can we use it? I'm like, yeah, okay, no worries. And on that MP3 player, we caught this what sounded like an ape down in the gully. We were at Wentworth Falls in the Blue Mountains. So anyone knows, just outside of Katoomba, there you've got Wentworth Falls. Takes a while to get down to where we were, and we went as far as the road could take us, and then we'd trek in on foot and make where the ute was based our home base, and we'd set up. I remember we had motion sensors, which, now that I think about it, I mean, was a bit of a stupid thing to put out in the forest. But we had motion sensors that were bought from like a discount store, a reject shop type thing. Clint's Crazy Bargains, it was back then. Any Aussie listeners would remember that. And they were motion sensors for doorbells, right? So these guys were also, they were into ghost stuff as well. So they had a lot of this equipment from their ghost research. So that was really all we had. And, and fishing bells, that's right. We had bells from fishing rods, because a couple of these guys love fishing, and a bit of fishing wire. And we'd, once again, another one that was probably a stupid idea in the middle of the forest where there's wallabies and kangaroos and pigs and, you name it, there's all sorts of wildlife in the Australian forests, and especially rainforests and mountain forests, which is where we were in. And they'd set up these... it was fishing wire with bells on it, and that was all good, but with the bells went off a few times, but it was more than likely wallabies. It was so much fun, though. That was the fun part, when we had this real basic shit equipment, like when we were just sleeping in swags under the sun, under the stars, and we'd take a couple of six packs out with us. The guys weren't so serious about it. They just wanted to experience it. And there was something about it. There was there was this whole thing of getting in touch with nature. We'd go out there, we'd even take garbage bags out there because a lot of the places where we'd go, people were leaving rubbish around the mountains and stuff. So we'd clean up where we went. We sort of saw it as our duty. And a couple of the guys had this idea that this is back before gifting was really talked about on mainstream, was that they liked the idea of gifting, but instead of gifting, as in giving the Yowie anything, they would show that they were looking after the land by cleaning up after it. They would show they were looking after the land by not causing too much damage when we went through the bush and things like that. And that was really cool. I mean, at the end of the day, I was sitting there, I was very happy because I sat there and went, well, I'm out bush, I'm camping, I'm with people I really enjoy talking to. I'm getting to, see some amazing areas of the Blue Mountains I'd never been to before. And this is all just a fun time. Then all of a sudden, they started getting a little bit of money put into it from a couple of other people who came along. Sorry if I'm ranting, but I just find this, to me, this is just me getting this out. So a bit of money came in. And so equipment started getting better, cameras, long vision, long range scopes, night vision. Had a couple of little night vision. They weren't great, but they were like a monoscope. So they were basically a viewfinder. A rangefinder. They were a rangefinder, but they had a night vision option on them. So it wasn't great night vision. Then there was talk they were going to look getting FLIR. They were going to look at getting heat vision, stuff like that. They were going to look at these cameras. And back then, just to get a basic bitch thermal imaging camera, you were looking at like $3,000 Australian, just to buy a real basic thermal imaging camera. Now you can buy thermal imaging cameras that match what you could get back then for like $300 or $400. It's insane how far tech's come. But what happened was, I started getting paid. So now I was even happier because I'm getting paid to go out bush. I'm getting paid to carry equipment. And I'm loving life. And remember, this was a side hustle. So this didn't happen every weekend. Might happen maybe a couple times a month. Anyway, then the money started coming in. People started supporting the group. New people started coming in. They started bringing in different methods. There was to be no alcohol taken out. There was to be someone on picket during the night, so someone staying up all night and then coming and waking you up to take your turn staying awake. They wanted to start up things like patrols. If you started like getting into a sort of jovial mood and started telling jokes, they didn't like it. They thought that the laughing and everything would actually scare things away, where I had to disagree. Like, I did a lot of research on animals when I was part of this group. It made me want to go and research. What is a Bigfoot? Okay, so it's a missing link between us and apes, essentially. So I started researching what is it that ape that attracts apes to. So if you're trying to attract certain apes or certain gorillas, things like that, what do you do? And to smile and laugh and show your teeth is actually a threatening thing to some apes. And I saw this as that's a perfect opportunity, right, that could draw them in. And then you had people in there who would get freaked out, like, oh, you can't do that. No, you can't push. You're pushing the limits. No, let's get out of here. And it's like, we didn't even see anything, you know? Like, there was nothing there. So it all got too much, in my opinion. That's when I ended up getting out of it. By then, I had full-time work, and I'd gone down a whole different path, and I'd sort of gone away from that stuff. They'd just taken all the fun out of it for me. And I really hadn't touched on this stuff too much, apart from watching things in my own house and doing my own research at home, buying books, things like that. Anyone who knows me probably would never have known that I was interested in this stuff. I shut it all off from the world because I didn't want anyone tainting it again, you know, like I didn't want anyone coming in and ruining what was left of what I found to be such an interesting topic. So likewise, that was a really hard thing. Like, this is me being fairly open now on the podcast, but that was very hard for me to even think about starting the podcast at first, because I figured, am I going to be bringing my interest into the real world and having that become what feels like work, and then that would ruin it for me? Or would I end up crossing paths with people who would just want to tear me to shreds, which I have, that has happened. And I've been able to handle that quite easily. It's been good. So that sort of put that fear out of my head. But this is why it's very rare. There's a handful of people out there that know who I really am and that I do this show in the first place. 95% of my family don't know I do a podcast. And that's really because I want to keep this something that's for me. I told a couple of mates about it because, let's face it, it's really hard to, especially when you get a really good result. Like, you publish a, okay, so was it last month? I got top 20 documentary podcasts in Sweden. So I was number 18 for documentary podcasts in Sweden for the month of March. That was awesome. I felt really proud of myself for that. And it sucks. I got my wife that I talk to the show, or talk about the show too, but there's a different thing with mateship, with the mates you have, and telling your mates, oh, I achieved this. And so I've got a couple of mates, two or three mates that know about this, know about the show. So hello if you're listening. And it's cool when I've got someone I can actually tell that I've done this, that I achieved this, I achieved these numbers. Just gets it off, you know. I will admit, I found myself becoming that guy talking about my podcast too much. I caught myself doing that. So don't become that guy either. But it's good to have a couple of people to talk to in regards to podcasts. But we're getting away from Bigfoot. That's what the topic of today's show is, or tonight's show is. And what I'm sort of getting at is that sometimes the Bigfoot research can be the best when you're just doing it basic, when you just scale it back. I've been watching the Survive Man series on Bigfoot, and he seems like he had the most fun when he did things that were real sort of basic. One of his later episodes where he went into a forest, and so Les Shroud, he goes into a forest and he plays guitar, and him and his friend, and I actually really do believe him, he seems like a fairly genuine person. A couple of people he had on his earlier shows, especially the Bigfoot series, the 1 to 14, I think there is. A couple of the episodes there, he's got a couple of people in there who I don't really think, I think they're full of shit. But he even says that in there, that he was there to find out who these people were and then talk to them. He didn't necessarily believe what these people were saying either. He just wanted to, go to the big names, go to the ones who everyone talks about, and he could make up his own mind, which is a really great idea. But the one episode, he did a short, it wasn't one of the episodes, it was its own thing. And he goes out to this forest and plays guitar, and him and his cameraman from one of his animal miniseries that he did are out there. I think he's a South African, or he's either South African or New Zealand. Anyway, they're out there and they're camping, and Les plays a bit of guitar before going to bed, and then they shut all the cameras off. All tech gets shut off, which is, you know, obviously people are going, oh, of course it gets an experience when there's no tech. So I just bump the mic because I'm rolling my sleeves up. It's actually getting quite warm in here. It's freezing outside though, getting into the -2s and -3s already. Anyway, So Les does this thing. He plays his guitar and then he goes to bed, no tech on. And him and his mate reckon they see red orbs in the forest around them, which that's pretty crazy. I mean, that's a bit hot. That's definitely something that people have reported on. But for Les to come out and say that, I genuinely do believe him because he has more to lose, really. Like a lot of people say, oh, he's trying to make money off the Bigfoot stuff. That stuff's not he's released this stuff for free. I mean, yeah, he's getting ad revenue off it from YouTube, but he's released every single episode of the Survivor Man Bigfoot searches free on his YouTube page. And yeah, he's not on there having his own ads. He's not on there, it's like gets 10 minutes in and he's like, oh, well, you know, I could only survive out in the wilderness if it was for my Gerber. Like, he's not out there selling anything. He's just doing a show. And the ads that you see that come up are ones that YouTube put on there, which some people would say, well, why does he monetize it? Well, you know, if you can make some hustle outside, I don't care. Like, if you think you can make a bit of hustle outside, good on you. But don't bullshit. Like, be genuine. And so far, Les, everything I've seen of his is he's really genuine. And I'd love to get an interview with him. He's big fish. I'm a little fish, but it'd be great to have an interview with him. If anyone knows Les, or if Les is listening from Survive Man, I'd love to have a chat. But so he talks about these red orbs and that was his experience. And as he even says in there, look, I don't care if you believe me. I don't care if you don't. If you believe me, you believe me. If you don't believe me, you don't believe me. But that's what I saw. And I'm like, cool, that's exactly right. And I don't see him going on every podcast and talking about these same things over and over again. Whereas some of these ones who I think are bullshitting will go on the podcast tours. And they'll go into every single podcast. I'll make a bit of money out of this one, a bit of money out of this one, a bit of, you know. So, look, Rick Dyer did a bit of this, made a lot of money. Well, enough money off of just driving around showing off a fake Bigfoot. He made $60,000 American, which, to put that into perspective for Americans, that's like $70,000 to $80,000 Australian. So, look, if I could make $80,000 just for driving around a couple of weekends in a year, he didn't go that far. And it's like, shit, like I could buy a really nice new car. But as I said, but if you can get side hustle doing that, fair game. But it's when you're using something you know is fake to get that side hustle. I don't care about people getting side hustle. I don't care about people getting a bit of cash on the side. But it should be coming from a genuine place. You should be believing what you're actually spitting out there. I had the Trigger Man from he's a man who believes he is in contact with aliens and they help him make extraterrestrial art. Now that guy, a lot of people have given him flack, and a lot of people have come to me after I did that episode and said, yeah, Oz, you know, he's a bit nuts. And I'm like, look, the dude's cool. I think it comes from a genuine place. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's spiritual or if it's alien. I don't know. But it comes from a genuine place. He genuinely believes this stuff. He genuinely is saying there is something helping him. And I believe that he believes it. And I believe there's something going on. But it's coming from a genuine place. And that's my main point, is that a lot of these other groups, like Rick Dyer, and a lot of these other groups, it's not coming from a genuine place. It's coming from a, how much bullshit can we fake to get onto Netflix? How much bullshit can we fake to get onto Amazon or Stan? You know, that might be a little bit controversial, but that's how I see it. And once again, the Bigfoot community can be its own worst enemy. And it's the same goes for the ghost community. It's same goes for the UFO community. It goes for any of these unexplained communities. So you've even got Mothman communities. Yeah, you want to break it down. Like, everything is a concentric circle. You know, you've got your ones who believe in Bigfoot, and you've got your ones who believe in Bigfoot. So you've got your ones who believe in Bigfoot, your ones who believe in aliens. But sometimes there's a concentric circle, and sometimes in the middle of the concentric circles is a middle group who believes that Bigfoots are aliens. Likewise, that group can also be butting heads with the opposite groups, and there's a lot of ego that gets involved in these things. And I think that's one of the worst things we see, is when people's egos get in the way. Look, if you've got something, you've got something. If you don't, you don't. There's no need to peacock yourself around and strut around. And I think the worst thing, and there's a show I watch that's great, Bigfoot Odyssey. I'd love to get on there and chat with them. I've been listening to Kerry for about 4 years now, 3 or 4 years. And Kerry's stuff is just really, really interesting. And his encounters, I believe he's had his big encounter he had. I actually believe he had that encounter. Like, he is one of the most genuine people in cryptozoology, really. Even if you put him in the whole group of cryptozoology, I think Kerry from Bigfoot Odyssey, I think he definitely stands out as someone who is genuine. You only have to look at his face. So the look on his face when he tells a story, he doesn't feel comfortable going into detail. It scared the shit out of him. You can tell it scared the crap out of him. He's not one of these ones who said, I've got to go back in there and find this. For years, he said, no, I'm not going back. So it definitely did scar him in a way to see a thing. And when you see something that's not supposed to exist, that would be mind-blowing. And he's just built a great show. Probably the main main source that I go to now for watching things about Bigfoot, that and recently checking out the Les Survive Man stuff. Les's stuff is just as good. It's really good. I really like Kerry's stuff, because Kerry gets some really genuine researchers on there, and he's going to be doing another 168 hours outfield, and that's gonna be really interesting. I can't wait to see the footage of what they caught in the last series. But if I was in America, he's putting out a thing saying anyone who's interested. So that's Kerry from Bigfoot Odyssey. Go and check it out. He's putting out feelers for anyone who wants to go along. I'm like, I do, but obviously don't live in America, so I can't. unless they want to fly me out there. But yeah, like, when you find people like that, it's like they really make you go, shit, there could be something out there. This is a guy that he had nothing to gain from coming out about this stuff, everything to lose. He's turned it into a bonus, you know, like now he's okay. So the last big documentary series I did, half the tech they use, like drones and stuff like that, they're looking at upgrading to new gear. So a $6,000 drone, they're looking to upgrade to an even better drone. So high tech stuff. And he started with the low tech stuff, but he hasn't lost his way. Like, him and his crew are still the normal people they were when I watched the very first episode of Bigfoot Odyssey, and the stuff he did before Bigfoot Odyssey, like some of the documentaries and things like that. He's still the same guy back then that he is today. He's just more knowledgeable about the topic. And and the tech hasn't destroyed his research. He hasn't focused on using just tech, but he's doing giveaways now where you can pay $10 and you get a raffle ticket essentially to win like a $6,000 drone or a $3,000 camera, stuff like that. And he could easily sell this stuff online, but he's not. He wants to give people who are watching his show a chance to win this used equipment and be able to use it on their own research tours and things like that. So I've got I really agree with what Kerry's doing. I really think he's on the right track. He really is hitting the mark. And look, I'm not going to talk up Bigfoot Aussie all night, but definitely check him out. But you find genuine people out there in the Bigfoot world who are like that. Problem is, if you scale out from what I know, like, so scale away from myself, and not saying I'm a expert, but I do know I'm genuine. I'm not going to come out here and tell you something that I haven't actually seen or I haven't actually experienced. And you look at people like myself, a bunch of other indie podcasts, real small podcasts who are out there who talk about things that they've experienced and their listeners have experienced. Then you see a bigger fish like Kerry and an even bigger fish like Les. And you zoom out and you go, then you look at all the information on the internet, and these guys' names don't appear. You know, like there's names out there that dwarf even them, but these names like Rick Dyer's name pops up freaking everywhere, and yet he's been proven that he admitted they faked some stuff. Yet someone like Kerry and someone like Les don't get that sort of, like, I don't see their names appearing in any of this data that's up here. I see Monster Quest appearing. There's a new documentary. This one I'm actually really interested in. We'll talk about that after, the new Hulu documentary. But there's, anthropologists who no one's really ever heard of, but their names appear everywhere because people love to use scientific names in it. Les Stroud gets mentioned once in about five pages I've got open right now on my screen. I found Les Stroud's name once, and that was just because I had to go through search and find it. And it doesn't even link to his website or anything. So, but yet there's a bunch of other names on here that I'm a bit like, really? And it's like, so before we go on, a lot of people love to come to me and go, oh, well, you know, the Patterson-Gimlin film, yeah, it was all fake. And I'm like, was it? They're like, yeah, like he admitted on his deathbed. There's no, that's been a running story since I was a kid, and yet no one's been able to tell me who was there who heard that, who was there who reported that. When Patterson passed away, he might have said that. He might not have said that. The family might have just been wanting to shut that whole thing down. Then you've got Gimlin. Gimlin was pushed into exile, essentially. He made no money from any of this, and he was essentially hiding because he felt that people were going to come after him. It's only been the last 5 or 6 years that Gimlin has actually come out and been talking about this stuff. And that, to me, Gimlin seems very genuine. Gimlin even said that he could have had a hoax perpetrated on him, but he doesn't. And that's what everyone goes, see, Gimlin said a hoax could have happened. But he also then goes on to say he knew Patterson quite well, and there's no way Patterson could have had the time to put time or effort to put into building something so unique. Now, it's an interesting thing. There's a documentary with the fellow who came out and said that he was the guy who built the suit for Patty. And yes, we'll talk a bit about Patty. She puts the sass in Sasquatch. It's Patty the Bigfoot. So Patty's the name that they gave the Bigfoot in the Sasquatch in the Patterson Gimlin film. The very well-known frame 352 is the one that we all know and love of Patty turning and looking at the camera. Now, a man came out saying that he made the suit. So this was Chris Murphy, was it? Oh no, Chris Murphy's a Bigfoot researcher. No, there was a Philip Morris. Philip Morris came out in 2002 saying he made the suit, and then Bob Hieronymus came out and said, so Bob Hieronymus, for those of you that don't know, he's a man who came out and said he's the person in the Patterson Gimlin film wearing the suit, and they went into great detail showing how they used football shoulder pads and all this, and he got into the suit in this sort of way. And but the story starts to fall apart because Philip Morris, once they were separated, later on, because they recreated it, and honestly, the recreation looks nothing like the original. And so after recreating it, years later, they sort of were getting interviewed separately, and they're talking about, they both get spoken to about the suit. So Philip Morris says that when he made the suit, he made it have a full bodysuit type of thing, like a onesie, but with detachable arms and hands and feet, and a detachable head. So that's what he was saying. Then Hieronymus came out and said, "No, sorry." Hieronymus was saying it was a one piece, and or it's either no. Hieronymus was saying it was a two piece. And Philip Morris is saying it's one piece. Now, Hieronymus, who is claiming he's the guy who wore it, isn't even saying what Morris is saying that he built. So the two of them separately, and then people are saying, oh, no, that's because Hieronymus is getting mixed up with the suit he wore in the recreation. No, I've read the notes. They were asking him when, on the day that Patty was caught on film, what sort of costume were you wearing? And Hieronymus came out and said that, yeah, it was this and this, this and this. So there's a few problems here. So Hieronymus and Long have, Hieronymus and Morris, rather, get a few things crisscrossed that don't make too much sense. Long quotes Hieronymus and Morris describing different ape suits in many respects. Among notable differences are the suit material. So horsehide versus dino. Hieronymus says he was told by his brother Howard that Patterson claimed he manufactured the suit from horsehide. When Long asked how heavy the suit was, Bob replied it weighed maybe 20-25 pounds. So it's 9 to 11 kilograms. Horsehide would be heavy, Bob added. It stunk. Roger skinned out a dead red horse. But Morris reports that the suit was made of dino, a lighter weight synthetic material with little or no odor. Morris said that it was his standard suit that we sold to all of our customers that cost $435, cheaper than the competition. Another contrast is that Howard reported that the horsehide was a real dark brown, and Long writes that Morris was using brown dinelle in 1967, but Morris wouldn't have wanted a real dark brown color, as he chose brown to contrast against the black background of a girl to gorilla illusion. Now, so Morris says that that he would have chosen a darker color to contrast for the girl to gorilla illusion. So essentially, a female gorilla on 2 feet with breasts. Yet Morris in an interview says, oh, I was told, did you know that the breasts bounce on this thing?
And he's like, no, I didn't design it to have bouncing breasts. And this director said, no, it had bouncing breasts. It must be fake then, or something like that. Anyway, so Morris is at one point saying he was never told it was going to be a female, and that Patterson added the breasts to the suit himself. But then later on, Morris is saying, oh, but I made it to look like a female gorilla on 2 feet. So what is it? Did he make it to look female or did he not? It's either one or the other. So top and trousers versus back zip onesie. Hieronymus described the suit as having no metal pieces and an upper torso part that he donned like putting on a t-shirt. At Bluff Creek, he put on the top. Asked about the bottom portion, he guessed it was cinched with a drawstring. But Morris made a one-piece union suit, which is a onesie, with a metal zipper in the back. Presumably, one stepped into it first, then wiggled in one's arms. In any event, donning it like a t-shirt would be impossible. Yet, Hieronymus said that he wore it like a t-shirt. Hands and feet. Suit attached versus separate. Hieronymus described the suit as having hands and feet that were attached to the arms and legs. But Morris made a suit whose hands and feet were separate pieces. Long speculates that Patterson riveted or glued these parts to the suit but offers no evidence to support this idea. If Patterson had done so, he must have done it before Hieronymus did his test fitting and walking, which once again would make no sense, because then that means he's relying on riveting or gluing these feet and hands on without knowing that it's going to fit the man that he's apparently hired. So you can sort of see where, was this two guys who realized, shit, you know what, we can make just as much money, if not more, by being the guys who come out and say and go against the narrative and say that this didn't actually happen. A lot of people wanted to prove it false, especially early 2000s. We had all those sort of debunking shows that were on TV. It's speculated that Patterson modified the costume, but only by attaching Morris's loose hands and feet to the costume by replacing Morris's mask. However, there's nothing he wrote on suit modification. There's no evidence or testimony that Patterson changed the Morris suit to horsehide or dyed it a darker color or cut it in half at the waist to agree with Hieronymus's description. Some film proponents say that Hieronymus's arms are too short to match that of Bigfoot and that he was a few inches shorter than the creature on the film. But Hieronymus said that he wore football shoulder pads, which might explain why the shoulders and arms appear to be out of proportion to the rest of the body. However, Hieronymus disclaimed that the use of arm-extending sticks in his costume and said that he wore gloves a little bit longer than my actual hands were. It was also said that Hieronymus was not as bulky as the creature, but film critics claimed that the suit could be corrected for that. However, Hieronymus did not mention there being padding in the torso, either when questioned by Long about the suit or when specifically asked about padding by Rob McConnell in his second X-Zone radio interview on August 6, 2007. Interesting thing is, both Patterson and Hieronymus were both polygraph tested and both came back telling the truth. Now, here's the interesting thing. Let's say Hieronymus was polygraph tested after he had done the recreation with Morris, Morris's new suit, because they didn't use the original suit. Morris reckons he doesn't know where. At one point there, I saw a video where Morris is holding the suit, saying, "This is the suit," and then another written interview, he's saying, "I don't know where the suit is." So the story crumbles again. Then Hieronymus did the recreation. So when asked if he wore that suit, Hieronymus, if he's a smart enough man, could draw upon the experience of wearing the suit the second time to happily say, yes, I did wear a suit and I did dress up as Bigfoot, because he did. You know, it's, if you can fool the polygraph by having a confidence in answering what you did, that's a whole thing on itself. I mean, Patterson could have done the same thing, 100%. Look, I still think the Patterson-Gimlin film is probably the best that we have. I think the fact that you've got five or six scientists and about three or four, five or six anthropologists and three or four people who are heavily experienced with videography rather, saying that this is real. I don't know. It could be real. It definitely could be real. I'm not going to deny that. I think there could be definitely something real about the Patterson-Gimlin film. And if they did fake it, well, there's one good thing that comes out of all this, and that is that it gets people out in the wilderness more. And if Bigfoot symbolizes anything, and Les Stroud says this fair bit in his five-man series on searching for Bigfoot, is that it gets people thinking about the wilderness, gets them thinking about nature. Even if it's just a symbol, even if Sasquatch is simply just a symbol, that gets people to understand that nature is a balance. That's a great thing. Look, just like UFOs, just like ghosts, just like all that stuff, I hope it's real. I really do. I hope they exist. But at the same time, it's still a great story, regardless. It still has a great message, regardless. There's been a lot of talk about whether they're a supernatural or paranormal type being. Yeah, I can see that. I can see people believing that. I can see how that could be a possibility. When we talk about the world existing on different planes of existence, and then we get right into some of that sort of real sort of brain-hurting, is the planet just a hallucination? Are we all just looking at the Matrix? You know, is this just all a big game? Are we a brain in a tank? We could go down. I've been down that road in a couple of the other episodes. Tonight, I was more or less just wanting to talk about the blood and bones idea of Bigfoot. I mean, there's even people who say that Bigfoot is an alien. We covered a bit of that in my Zoo Planet episode as well, where we talked about potentially this is a giant terrarium, and every so often the owner of that terrarium likes to put something weird in here for us to play with and react to. The problem with those going down that road, and we're over the hour mark already, I didn't even have a break tonight. The interesting thing about that part of things is that if we go down that road, it's not like falling down the rabbit hole. It's like falling down the rabbit hole and then finding that every time you go down further, it opens up into four different tunnels. And four different tunnels, which I guess is what a rabbit warren is, but these four different tunnels open up into more and more, and it doesn't end. You know, if you go down that psychological side of it, this spiritual side of it, it does not end. If you go down the alien side of it, it does not end. But the blood and bones side of it is probably my preferred way of looking at it, just because I can easily sit here and say, what if they did exist? And we've wiped them out. You know, what if they did exist at some point and they're all gone now? They may not have existed in our lifetime. They may have existed in, say, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. And in that time, they were just a weaker species that couldn't survive. That's a big possibility. The hard thing with that is the fossil records would suggest that we don't have anything that new on the fossil record. Gigantopithecus is the closest we'd get. But even then, fossil records for that are slim at best. So that's where the paranormal sort of comes into it, because shit, like, where are these bones going? Where are these fossils going? Well, look, there's been people who have gone through jungles that are in Africa and Amazon in Asia, who know there are large wild cats in there, and they'll go through these forests and they'll never see one. Yeah, they'll never see a body or the bones of one of these cats in a jungle, in a forest, I mean. Yeah, a lot of people, oh, bloody Java, scared the crap out of me. A lot of people will, they'll go through a forest in Asia and you won't see an Asian elephant or an Asian rhino. But they exist. They are there. You know, it's, the world's a much bigger place than what we think it is. And the problem, I think, is that nowadays we're so tuned into these little televisions and these screens. And I think that's the best thing about podcasting, is that you can have your entertainment on the go. You can download this episode that you're listening to right now and you can take it out there. You can go on the trails. You don't have to have a screen in front of you to listen to what I'm talking about. You can go out there on those tracks. You can go and do your own research. You can listen to this stuff that I'm talking to you about while you do all this. But you can't do that while you're watching a documentary on Netflix. You can't do that while you're watching a movie. You know, there's a great new documentary coming out on Hulu about a group of marijuana growers that supposedly were attacked and chased off by Bigfoot. I'm so keen to watch that. But at the same time, I'm still going to take the time to go out to my local forest and explore. I'm not out there looking for Yowie. I'm not out there looking for the Black Panther. If I find something cool like that, fuck yeah, I'm going to love that shit. But if I don't, I don't. I mean, I still get a good day out there in the wilderness. And I think that's the biggest problem we have right now, is that people are too busy, especially during last year. I mean, we had a whole year where people were stuck indoors. Starting to come out now, and people have become so used to their cave that they don't want to step outside the cave anymore. They don't need to anymore. Everything has been built around us now to not leave our caves. You know, every company, you name the company, is now designed to come to you. I can literally get an online video foot measuring thing done by Athlete's Foot to go and get myself a new pair of shoes. They will do an online video appointment with me where they'll scan my feet through my phone and put it into their system and do measurements using an app that I have to download and work with them on. And that will give them the exact right measurements for my feet and what I need. And they'll send me the shoes that I want. And I don't need to leave my house. And then you get going, what do I need the shoes for when I don't leave my house? Yeah, I just bought a pair of really good trail runners. And the reason why I bought them was I need that kick in the ass, that push. Look, I spent a bit of money on these shoes. So now I'm pushing my brain to go, hey, don't waste that money. You spent money on those shoes. Now go out there and put them to use. Well, these aren't made for running on treadmills. These are made for running on tracks up in the mountains. So that's where I'm going to take them. You know, it's that push out the door. It's that, every journey starts with one step, and you've got to leave your door to go on that journey. Yeah, I love video games. Yes, I love pop culture and media and all that. But when you've spent a couple of days out there in these rainforests and mountain forests especially, I love the mountains, and you see what's out there, and you just go through silently, some of the best walks I've had is I've taken away what I can hear and just used my eyes. So I've put in a podcast or I put in some music and I just look with my eyes. Other times I don't have any music or anything. I listen and I might just sit there. Sometimes I sit there and I just close my eyes and just listen to what's around me. Certain parts of the forest you'll just hear. You'll hear like ants moving through. Yeah, it's insane how silent a forest can get but also be so noisy at the same time. Anyway, I'm starting to ramble a bit. I'm getting quite tired as well. But I hope you enjoyed this. This is more just a Bigfoot chat, a ramble. So I hope I didn't bore you all to tears. But yeah, there's a bit of my perspective on the whole Bigfoot point of view and where I'm coming from with that. And if you like this, if you want a bit more of this personal view on what I think about things, I'd love to do more shows like this rather than just always being a show about here's the facts, which I'm afraid some of the shows have become a bit like that recently, where it's like here's all the data I've found online and I'm going to give it to you. So if you like the idea of me doing some more personalized content, I'm up for it. I've really enjoyed doing this actually. But yeah, well, make sure you check out the podcast on iTunes and anywhere your podcast your pod finders and all that Podbean and all that. Check it out on all different platforms. Find the platform that you like. A lot of different platforms are better or worse. You'll find what you like. If you are on iTunes, so please leave a review. Hopefully 5-star. I'm not out here trying to make a ton of money from this. This is just this is a bit of fun for me. But it's good to have good feedback. It's good to have negative feedback too. Creative feedback. Creative feedback is important. Also, make sure you check out the Twitter page at Aussie Oddball, most active on there, and also the emails, the Oddball Aussie Podcast at hotmail.com, Instagram and Facebook as well, the Oddball Aussie Podcast. Not as active on Facebook as much as I want to be, but Facebook annoys me a bit, so I don't get on there all that much. But definitely the Twitter and the email address at Aussie Oddball and the Oddball Aussie Podcast at hotmail.com. And I'll definitely have a chat to you. You want to come on the show, you've got some experiences or anything like that, I'd love to have a chat with you. What else? Straight Up Strange Productions, that's a network that I'm a part of. Definitely check them out. Some really good content on there. Hopefully I'll get a interview done next week for the start of May. It's pushing it a bit this week, but we're going to see what we can get done. And yeah, I think that sort of sums everything up. Yeah, I hope you're all enjoying that. I know I've seen that the numbers have died off a bit recently, but that's happened to everyone. I think there's a lot of stuff going on in the world at the moment, but definitely make sure you take that time to get your head out of that media world and come and listen to some weird shit with me, because sometimes you need to do it. Sometimes you just need to listen to a weirdo rant on a podcast. Anyway, look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.